The information provided in the following program is not a substitute for or intended to be medical advice. Medical advice can only be provided to you by your personal physician.
Welcome to JFK Spotlight on Health. I'm Raquel Williams, and here we highlight the groundbreaking work being done at JFK Medical Center in Edison, all part of the Hackensack Meridian Network. Visiting us today is Dr. Christine Grice. She is director of the Concussion Program, Traumatic Brain Injury, and is certified clinical assistant professor at Rutgers Robert Wood Johnson Medical School. Dr. Grice is also with the Inpatient Stroke Rehabilitation Department of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation at JFK Johnson Rehabilitation Institute. Dr. Grice, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Raquel.
Well, of course, fall school sports season is upon us, and I know that there are plenty of parents that are concerned about their kids' health. And of course, they need to know what to look out for when it's time to be concerned about a head injury. So let's get right down to basics, Doctor. First, let's talk concussions. What exactly is a concussion?
So pretty much a concussion is when there is some sort of a force that's transmitted through the body. Now, I'm specifically saying through the body, not necessarily a direct impact to the head, but it could be a force transmitted through the body that makes its way, those force factors and vectors make their way to the brain and cause some rattling and changes in the chemical balance and some maybe even some stretches of some cellular structures in the brain that generally then lead to symptoms that are delayed neurological symptoms, cognitive recovery, focal neurological deficits immediately after the impact or the injury. And pretty much people can have a blow to the head and not feel any symptoms after it. So that by definition really isn't a sustainable concussion. It could be a subconcussive blow. But if there are some symptoms immediately, seconds, minutes, hours, or even days following that impact, then that by definition is a concussion.
Wow. Okay. All right. So let's talk about what parents should look for. Say their child is in sports program, or they have a son that plays football, and something happens and they're on the field and they have a head injury or any kind of injury, and something's just not right. What is it that a parent should look for in their child after any kind of injury on a field of play?
Well, very important. First thing is recognizing what can be, what can cause a concussion. So anytime there's two bodies or two masses kind of going to each other, now I'm taking this back to physics, they kind of collide. It pretty much looks, you have to look at the way the direction of the head and the size of the neck, and we have to look at all of these things that were occurring during the injury. And then also watch immediately within seconds after the injury, did the person fall down? Did they seem a little bit off balance after that impact? Were they veering in the wrong direction? What was happening? Did they feel like they were just talking gibberish to their colleagues and their teammates? And then also, a few minutes to hours after, did they feel a little bit tired? Did they feel like they were drained, washed out? Were they complaining of that they were in a state of a fog for quite some time? Were they just not being themselves? Were they a little bit more irritable? So parents, coaches, teachers, athletic trainers, anybody that's kind of surrounding the athlete should really be aware of these signs and suspect and have a high index of suspicion that a concussion may have occurred, especially if the following day after a period of rest and inactivity, if those symptoms don't go away.
Wow. Now, how many days should a parent or medical professionals monitor someone after, an incident like this? You said it could happen a day or maybe a couple of days later. Things could be off. I mean, how long should you follow them?
Well, depends on the age. So okay. If we're talking younger athletes, mm-hmm. We usually look at anywhere, even 5-6-year-olds. Keep in mind, it's all dependent on the age. Why? Because you have, first of all, the size of the skull and the actual size of the brain inside the skull that's floating at all times. Now, remember, based on the impact, even one small blow to the head in a 5-year-old has very different effects than that same impact with the same situation, same scenario in an 11 or 12-year-old, and then again in an 18-year-old. And the reason being is because there's a lot more room to shake, the brain itself shaking inside the skull, oscillating back and forth during impact. And even when the impact has stopped and the skull is no longer moving, that brain can still have a lot of room to shake for a few seconds after the impact. And so those different effects that happen in a microcellular level translate clinically into different signs. So a person, to answer your question in the long way, or in the longer version, parents should really have a lookout for up to 1-2 weeks, maybe even 3 weeks in children, in younger children, just to see if they're acting a little bit funny, just to see if, are they developing post-traumatic headaches? Are they a little bit more irritable than usual? Are they not tolerant to different changes in temperature? Are they more light sensitive? Are they noise sensitive? Now, in let's say that this is also a different scenario, and we have multiple concussions in one game. You know, sometimes those effects, you really have to keep an eye out for a few weeks. Now, is there a magic number? Absolutely not. Why? Because everybody is different. Every head and neck structure is different. Everybody's baseline, the mass of the brain itself is different, and the shape and size of the skull. And so all of these factors come into play. So what's important is to really know your athlete at the end of the day and know the person, recognize if they are acting a little bit funny, if they are acting a little bit off, if they're a little bit more anxious than usual. People should not dismiss symptoms of anxiety and irritability to just kind of the psychosocial factors that go on in that, in those teenage years or in those young years. Really, they should really be aware of how does that athlete generally respond to stressful situations? Are they responding outside of their norm? Or are they acting differently? And really keep an eye out on that, not just for a day or two, but even when that athlete returned to play, really will we know if they recovered from a concussion? We'll actually be able to know, all right, this is actually something different right now. They've recovered from the concussion, but yet they had another hit or they're returning to play and they're just not themselves. So maybe okay. They did have a concussive episode in that first game, even though they returned to play, and something is just a little bit off about them. So it's always good to keep that high index of suspicion, you know, throughout the season.
Okay. All right. And so to follow them for about 3 weeks, and let me make sure I'm clear on this. Should we be more concerned? I know obviously we should be concerned with any injury, no matter the age, but should we be more concerned with the toddlers, the smaller ones, the 5-6-year-olds that are running around and may have sustained a concussion? Is there more of a risk factor for them?
Well, keep in mind, with toddlers, one or two impacts is different. I mean, yes, there is a concern because of the fact toddlers are different from 5 or 6 year olds. So you're talking about 2 year olds.
Mm-hmm.
They are different. I mean, keep in mind that the skull, the amount of cartilage that's in the skull that hasn't fully cleared up or disappeared to formally an adult skull, it's still there. So toddlers can take a hit to their head and they can bounce right back, literally, because the cartilage is made of a different type of material than bone. And so it has a little bit of more force absorbing effects. However, 5 and 6 year olds, you have to ask yourself, it's not just the one hit that might be affected, but it's the subconcussive blows, the repetitiveness of the smaller head injuries back and forth over time that can cause a concern.
Okay. You know, I'm thinking about this and I'm thinking about back when we were in school and you'd hear about, you know, someone being injured and they say, oh, they just had a concussion. They're resting.
Right.
And, you know, I still hear that today. Do we take concussions too lightly, you think?
I do. But I think that we're actually a little bit smart about it now compared to a few years ago and maybe even, you know, decades ago.
Right.
I think we're getting there. Keep in mind that we are in really the early phases of research in brain injury medicine to begin with. So, you know, it's not surprising. You know, brain injury medicine itself as a field, you know, wasn't really kind of recognized for quite some time until in the recent years. So it's important to keep that also in the back of our heads, that we're just kind of, our knowledge about the brain is still in its early infant stages.
Okay. And if you could just expound on this a little bit, you did mention that it doesn't have to be a significant blow to the head that can cause a concussion. I mean, it could be a mild blow and it doesn't even have to be to the head.
Exactly. So it's very important. It's actually the generation and the movement of all the force vectors that are transmitted to brain tissue and then result in a neurological change in the person. Those are the things that can result in concussive changes. Very important to remember that, because it could also be a subconcussive blow, meaning a milder impact that we wouldn't even think twice that it would cause these neurological deficits, but maybe the brain is recovering from a prior minor impact, and then one on top of that, and it's an exponential effect, if that makes sense. And so the repetitiveness or the repetitive nature of these small impacts that can happen during sports season, they're the ones that can cause problems. And also, it could also be whiplash injuries. We know for a fact that there's anywhere between 50 to 90% of all whiplash injuries that are significant enough to cause a lot of muscle spasms in the back of the neck may also result in subconcussive blows to the head. And so it's very important to kind of keep that in mind. And it's all about force factors and how they were transmitted.
So how prevalent, Dr. Grice, are concussions in young children in general?
Well, the CDC keeps counting numbers. I mean, from the statistics that tell us anywhere between, 300,000 from athletes that present to the emergency room, and up to several million that report concussions, sometimes even 3 weeks out. And this is just in the athlete in the sports stage. And so we're not even talking about concussions outside of the sports world. So they are, yes, they're very, very, very prevalent, happening every day. I mean, I guess since the beginning of time, people have been hitting their heads.
True. That's true. All right. You're listening to JFK Spotlight on Health. I'm Raquel Williams, and we are visiting with Dr. Christine Grice. She is director of the Concussion Program, Traumatic Brain Injury, and certified clinical assistant professor at Robert Wood Johnson Medical School. And Dr. Grice is also with the Inpatient Stroke Rehabilitation Department of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation at JFK Johnson Rehabilitation Institute. And we're talking all about concussion in sports. It's that time of year again where the kids are back on the fields and they're playing the fall sports. And there are some things that parents definitely need to pay attention to and look out for when it comes to head injury. When we come back, we're going to take a quick break. We come back, we'll talk about treatment for concussions and some of the sports that are more of risk factors than others. And we'll do that in a moment. You're listening to JFK Spotlight on Health. I'm Raquel Williams. And of course, on JFK Spotlight on Health, we highlight the groundbreaking work being done at JFK Medical Center in Edison, all part of the Hackensack Meridian Network. And we are with Dr. Christine Grice today. She is director of the Concussion Program, Traumatic Brain Injury. She is certified clinical assistant professor at Rutgers Robert Wood Johnson Medical School. And Dr. Grice is, of course, also with the Inpatient Stroke Rehabilitation Department of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation at JFK Johnson Rehabilitation Institute in Edison. So we're talking all about concussions. Now, Dr. Grice, are there any particular sports that kids are playing today that cause more risks or that have more risk factors than others when it comes to concussions?
Yes, there are several sports. We have mainly football, contact sports such as soccer, basketball, lacrosse. I mean, the list goes on. They're mainly all any contact sport will run a risk of concussion. So we don't kind of bias it from one sport to the next, but it's very important to realize that anytime we expose ourselves to, these contact sports, there's a risk.
Okay. And of course, most of the contact sports, I think most of them, they have some kind of protection that you can wear, mostly some headgear or other protection that you can wear to kind of ease any.
Absolutely.
Are they enough? You think they're doing enough?
I think we can do more.
Okay.
At the end of the day, we know very well that even the fanciest of helmets in all-star athletes and, kind of professional football players and professional soccer players and, the ones that the techniques that they use to protect themselves, all of these things are great, but more that they can actually do and improve on. And so we know very well that there's still room to grow. Not all of the helmets, and we know there is not this one helmet that can fully prevent against a concussion. We know for a fact that no matter how much we change techniques and promote safety, there's always that human error. And there's always that risk of still sustaining that concussion. So it's a concern.
you know, I don't want to pick on any particular sport. I'm just thinking off the top of my head right now. And I don't know too many kids that do this, but boxing. Boxing is the one that right. comes to my head. Like, the whole goal here is to, you know, knock your opponent out. It happens on some occasions, but you're taking blows to the body and to the head. That can't be right. too safe.
Absolutely. It's definitely not safe. And keep in mind, even if the blow is not considered impactful through the outside observer, it's not really enough to say that, that wasn't a concussion. We really can't tell because sometimes it's the repetitiveness or the repetitive nature of these injuries that can actually result in concussive symptoms over time. We know for a fact that in one game for instance, flag football or in one game of soccer, with the amount of headers that a person can do or the amount of impact that a person has in football, for instance, the person can sustain anywhere between 45, 90, 120. I mean, these numbers have been reported, throughout all levels of professionalism, and it's the numbers are really mind-boggling. Mm-hmm. Because when we look at it, we realize that there is an issue with the repetitiveness of these impacts, mm-hmm. and that might actually be causing an issue later on in terms of cognitive development
okay.
for the person.
Okay. Now, since we're talking about that, what is a safe age for kids to start sports, or does it depend on the sport?
It depends on the sport. So, again, the best time we always say is when the person has developed a proper technique, when the person has developed a proper appropriate musculature to absorb the forces that are going to happen in the impact, and when they are cognitively ready. Now, of course, does that mean that we prevent kids from playing sports? No. I mean, sports are amazing. They're great. They really are good in team building skills. And, they learn, of course, besides, of course, all the cardiovascular benefits that
right,
come with playing
right,
sports.
Right.
So we always mm-hmm. encourage that. But again, it's important to promote safety. It's important to remind, with athletes and coaches and trainers, keep that, their guard up always in recognizing what type of behavior will cause repetitive injuries and concussions. I mean, there's actually one statistic that tells us, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but I just came across this, which was impressive. One statistic tells us that high school boys specifically tend to intentionally and promote more impacts during one game, almost 45 times more than the same game at the same level as the girls. So,
Take
basketball, for instance. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing. So they're 45 times more likely to intentionally hit each other during the game than the girls. But again, and the same thing with, for instance, girls soccer mm-hmm. With the headers. Their neck mass is smaller. They can't absorb the same forces. They're more prone to whiplash injuries, cervical spine injuries. And those are the things that can actually not absorb any forces, and those forces are then transmitted into the brain to itself and result in more concussions, again, comparing to boy soccer, for instance. So, again, there's no right or wrong answer for this. There's no magic number or magic age. Mm-hmm. If there was, we would all know by now. But it's really important to kind of recognize all these other factors that come into play.
Okay.
So, of course, training. Not really skipping out on sessions, exercises, muscle building, strength training, resistance and endurance, improving cardiovascular performance before going into the game.
Okay. Now let's talk about what should be done when someone shows signs of a concussion. You're on the field of play, something happens, they're showing signs that something's not right. I mean, right off the bat, what should you do?
Absolutely take them out of the game. There's no question about it. And they're not allowed to return back the same game. And then, of course, it all depends on their neurological status upon immediate testing, if they were even to return back the next day. And we do have a general graduated return to play protocol in place, that was set forth simply because it's really for the safety of the athlete. Allow for that brain that's possibly swelling for the swelling to come down. Allow for that fogginess to clear. Allow for the dust to settle. And so all of these things we put into play. The athlete should by no means return to the game.
Okay. So when would it be safe for them to return to play?
It all depends. So they have to be symptom-free,
mm-hmm.
and they have to be symptom-free with the graduated process, meaning symptom-free at rest, symptom-free when they're moving around doing their daily activities, symptom-free when they're doing practice drills, or strength training and resistance and extra and cardiovascular training, endurance, symptom-free, and then during the game. And then if they are not, then you go in a stepwise approach again, start from scratch and take another rest, and then gradually increase each level of training while they're symptom-free. So okay. that can take anywhere between 1 to 2 days to several weeks for some athletes. I have one athlete I think I see in our practice. It took him about 2-3 months. And we always return to learn first before returning to play. So keep in mind that, let's say, the athlete does return to the game and they have no problems, but then every time they look at a computer screen, their phone, a projector that's in the classroom, every time they look at the board, they have nausea, dizziness, eye pain, headaches. If they complain of any of these things, or if they're just fatigued and foggy mm-hmm. at the end of the day, of the school day, then we say, all right, you know what, you get out of the game completely. Let's focus first on the learning, why you're having these issues, and let's address these issues first mm-hmm. before we even return to the game.
So how do you treat a concussion? Is there such a thing as treating a concussion, or is it all about just rest?
So I always say this. If we've ever tried a magic thing, one thing to treat a cold, there's no such thing. So how do we even treat colds, for instance? And I love using this analogy mm-hmm. Because it's a combination of things. Is it just, for instance, getting rest and sleeping? Is it just drinking, warm fluids? Is it just, relieving sinus pressure? Is it just lowering the temperature? What is it really? It's all of those things at once. And it's the way we do them. And it's the combination of treatments that actually improves all of the symptoms. And so the same thing okay. with concussions.
Mm-hmm.
We work on just relative cognitive rest. Not necessarily is it strict rest anymore, but relative. We always want to make sure that the person is able to do something. And then we gradually increase the amount of activities that athlete does throughout the day that they normally would do. And we say, all right, let's work on this now. Let's work on this today. I want you, instead of, jogging for 1 mile, let's pick up the speed a little bit. Let's see how you feel. Do mm-hmm. you feel better during it? Do you feel better after? Are you yourself? Are you still able to hang out with friends after a long school day, for instance?
Right.
Are you still able to look at your phone, or are you able to do homework on the computer without any problems? So the way we treat it is really a gradual, stepwise approach, where we gradually reintroduce all of the things that they were doing day in and day out. So there is no magic thing, that one thing that we do. And then in the meantime, we also optimize their medical health, so stay away from alcohol, get your sleep well, go out and get some fresh air, mm-hmm. eat right, mm-hmm. hydrate. Hydrate is definitely one of the biggest factors in okay. avoiding headaches, for instance. Those are the things we always tell our athletes.
Okay. And finally, Doctor, can a concussion be fatal?
If a concussion causes enough swelling in the brain, and then a subsequent concussion occurs that's not even as forceful enough, but the swelling is too much, the brain can actually herniate mm-hmm. through the, through the neck,
right.
I should say, and then that can be fatal. And that's called second impact syndrome.
Okay. Very scary. But, we don't really have to be scared if we take the proper precautions. We know
Absolutely.
The signs and we know what to look for. And, of course, as you say, when an injury is sustained on the field of play and something's not right, out of the game you go, and you're not back until until you're monitored and tested, and all of the different ways that you treat and monitor a patient. We've been visiting with Dr. Christine Grice, Director of the Concussion Program, Traumatic Brain Injury, Certified Clinical Assistant Professor at Rutgers Robert Wood Johnson Medical School, also with the Inpatient Stroke Rehab Department of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation at JFK Johnson Rehabilitation Institute. You can go to the website jfkjohnson.org for more information. You can check out Dr. Christine Grice. She's right there. And more about the center at JFK Johnson Institute. They are doing great work there. Dr. Grice, thank you so much for your time as well. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Rocco.